This meeting of the Blaine City Council will come to order February 12, 2018. May we have a moment of silence, please? Please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May we have roll call, please?
Charlie Hawkins.
Here.
Meg Olson.
Here.
Alicia Rule.
Here.
Bonnie Onion.
Here.
Eric Davidson.
Here.
Steve Lawrenson and Mary Lou Stewart both requested to be excused.
May I have a motion to excuse Steve, please?
So move.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion to excuse Mary Lou.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Next is audience participation. We have a few people signed up. If you didn't sign up, you can still have a chance to speak after we go through these four people I have on here. The first one is George McKinney.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm George McKinney. I live at 5547 Canvasback Road, Blaine, Washington, better known as Semiahmoo. And I thought I should come, since I haven't been able to make, for health reasons, any meeting, I should come and introduce myself to our new candidates, our new council members. And I'll tell you why. You'll see me sitting back there in the back. I'm the liaison for SRA to the city council. So if any time you need anything to get to them or what have you, and I'm here, just feel free to ask. If I might, I would like to introduce the next person that's on the list that you have there. That would be Greg Wendt. He is the president of the SRA. I believe he wants to speak. So thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, George. My name is Greg Wendt. I live at 8800 Goshawk Road in Blaine. I am the newly elected president of the Semiahmoo Resort Association. I'm here to introduce myself to the council and others. And also tonight, I have a special interest in the Sea Smoke development. I'm concerned and I want to make sure that the council is aware that we haven't signed our CC&Rs yet. We are within negotiations with the developer, and I think those are going along very smoothly, but we haven't finalized them yet. I am also here in support of the discussion on Track D. I authored a letter. I think the council and the planning commission received that letter. I would like to express my support for the council and the planning commission going forward with preserving Track D as either an open space or a park, and finding some method whereby the city of Blaine can support that purchase of that property for that specific purpose.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Next we have Don Hootford.
Well, I just came to ask if there's any interest, still interest in the city of Blaine of developing a museum. Over the years, I've heard from time to time if they were going to do a museum. And I guess the reason I became interested again is that I found the old fire truck over in a field over here by Laurel, and I'm thinking of rounding it up and looking for an end place for it at some point.
Hmm. Very Very interesting.
Food for thought.
So you're thinking about it, does it need to be restored?
Pardon?
It needs to be restored?
Well, a little, yeah. I can make anything run.
You can.
No problem.
Well, thank you for letting us know. I don't know of any current plans for a museum. I know a few years ago, there were some folks in town that wanted to get a historical society together and with the idea of having a museum. I haven't heard anything much about that lately. City would support that as far as we could. I sure wish a group would get something together. So if you can help make that happen in any way, that would be great. Mayor?
So is the fire district interested in... Is the fire district interested in anything like that for restoring one of the original fire trucks from Blaine? I mean, this a volunteer type thing?
Should I go to the microphone?
Sure.
It's an interesting question because we had the house for a long time, the 1949 American La France, and we just weren't using it, and there was no museum to put it in, and so we actually ended up selling the 1949. I don't know which one you found.
That's a 49.
Is it the 49?
I've managed that thing for 30 years.
So, I mean, if there was a museum, it'd be a great thing to put in a museum, and we would help support that. But we had no use for it or a place to store it or keep it. So that's kind of where it was at. So I think we're talking about the same
problem. Yeah, same thing. Yeah.
Just for that specifically, if there could be a place to put it in to protect it, and even if it was just brought out for parades and special things like for kids or, you know, something like that would be really nice to have, even if it weren't in a museum per se. Did you have something?
I did. I would just recommend that you get in touch with me or any of the people working on the Downtown Alliance. There's an arm of that plan that includes historical interest. So, of course, I don't have a specific answer for you, but that might be a place to explore that. Blaine Downtown Alliance.
Okay.
Sure, absolutely.
In addition, I know a couple of meetings that I've been to, the Friends of the Library, as well as the Salishan Association a little bit longer ago, there continues to be discussion that we're all involved with about what to do with the property that the city owns downtown and with the old city hall. And it's been voiced by those associations, as well as I think it was brought up in a survey that the city recently completed, that there is interest in there being a museum and preserving historical assets. But I think it's important that that does need to come from the citizenry originally. And if a group of people interested in that could come together, I think that the city would definitely support carving out a space and perhaps funding for that kind of thing to happen.
All right, thank you. And the last person on the list is Blair Smith, also to speak on Sea Smoke.
Good evening, Council. Blair Smith. I live at 9141 Glen Eagle Drive, Blaine. I live right across from Sea Smoke. Appreciate being able to address you tonight. I'm here in support of the Semiahmoo Resort Association's January 23rd letter to you folks, advocating the creation of a public or privately owned green space in that Tract D. Clearly, Washington Administrative Code 365-196-850 allows the city to use a portion of development impact fees received for these types of purposes. I spoke throughout the process and created numerous letters and organized our neighbors to do the same, so I was here through all of this. There was a lot of public comment throughout the process, and although it was largely ignored by the city staff, it was overwhelmingly in support of this concept. And I've read Mr. Jones's letter dated February 12th to you folks, and the word park is thrown around quite a bit. I would say that what we're trying to get out there is very in keeping with the neighborhood. It's a public green space. It's nothing that the the city would have to maintain. I don't know how you're going to go about doing it, whether you are able to purchase it or the developer donates it or some combination thereof, but clearly I would like to see that happen. The neighborhood out there is unique, and I just think that I think it's important for a city to listen to the input of its citizens, and if you go back and look at the written record, I don't think you're going to see anyone that was against it, and there was a lot of people that were for it. And there's a lot of tax increases that are coming our way. I've been reading in the paper, we're going to have a big property tax increase. There's going to be a school bond levy. And I've taken part in some of the surveys that the city has done regarding beautifying our downtown. So I assume there's going to be some more coming, and I think it's really important for citizens to feel they're being heard and listened to, and for government to work for and with its citizens. And when that doesn't happen, I think dysfunction happens, and I think you get voter pushback. And I think that's one of the reasons there's two new council members sitting up there. So I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. And as you probably all know, this does appear later on in our agenda, a discussion on the sea smoke development, including the track deed. Okay. Next we have the fire chief's report. Chief Hollander.
Evening again. Short report tonight, just sharing with you our monthly newsletter. The thing I'd like to point out is that we did have our awards in January. We had a Firefighter of the Year, a Volunteer of the Year, and a Chief's Award that went out to an entire shift crew, and it's kind of an interesting story. This shift responded to a gentleman that fell off the roof of a shed. I won't get into real specifics. They picked him up. He's going to be all right. They took him to the hospital. When he came home at the end of the day after being in the emergency room, the crew was on the shed finishing the roof for him. And so he came to the meeting and was so appreciative, and the crew said, it's not that we like doing roofs, they just didn't want to see him fall again. So that was an interesting story, and that's why the Chiefs Award went to that crew, so I just wanted to point that out to all of you. And with that, I'll answer any questions if you have any. Super. Nope. Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, the next, we have a few written communications. One letter dated January 25th from Dennis Olison regarding street vacations. There's an email dated January 26th from Debbie Smith and Eric Davidson regarding the sea smoke development. Letter dated January 30th from Ann Abrams regarding her recent Blaine Builder Award. And a letter dated January 30th from Brian and Diane Major regarding their recent Blaine Builder Award. In both cases, those were very nice thank you letters. And moving on to the consent agenda, we've got approval of bills in the amount of $271,543.61 and wire registers in the amount of $355,704.71. Approval of payroll of $555,202.30. And approval of the January 20th council retreat minutes and approval of the January 22nd council meeting minutes.
So moved.
Motion to approve. And second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion on it or question on the vouchers? There was a memo from our finance director regarding some of the items, the non-recurring monthly items. When we had our finance committee this week, we asked for a little more clarification on some of the things that they kind of intuitively knew that we might have questions about. And, of course, we can ask any further questions, and hence the reason for that memo. And I think that helped to clarify.
That's excellent, yeah.
Yeah, it really helped to clarify things for me. So, anyway. Okay, so it's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. All in favor, say aye.
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 And any opposed? Motion carried. 5-2-5. Unanimously, I guess I should say. Okay, now we have some action items to go through. The first one is Resolution 1727-18, the 2018 Comprehensive Plan Docket. Mr. Jones, would you like to go through that for us?
Yes, thank you, Council. This item is an annual occurrence, and actually there's an opportunity in the city's code for a second annual docketing, or second docketing to happen later in the year, but typically it will only happen in January or February. The comprehensive plan is able to be updated once a year. That happens late in the year. So what we do is there's an opportunity for the public, for the council, planning commission, or for staff to recommend changes, amendments to the comprehensive plan. Those are due in the end of December, and this is the proposal that are all coming, these are all coming forward from community development. There are none that were submitted by the public or initiated by the planning commission, and you of course know that you didn't initiate any this year. The three items, the first item is a carryover, as is indicated there, and that one is just kind of been tabled for a while, so sort of somewhat in the works. The second, third, and fourth are the new items. The first one is related to the planned commercial zoning district, which is a small zoning district that is located down by Dakota Creek and the Bell Road intersection. And then there's also a small bit of it up by the WeQ, kind of behind the grocery store. And we want to look at that zoning district, potentially some of the changes to the zoning code that might be adopted, or some of the considerations related to that zoning district could include some comprehensive plan changes, like perhaps changing some of it from commercial to residential or from commercial to manufacturing. That would require a comprehensive plan amendment as well. So that's why we're docketing it. Even though it's mostly a zoning change, it could have some included comprehensive plan amendments. The first thing I guess I should mention, though, and I should have mentioned this before I started, was docketing is just allowing staff to work on it, directing us to do that with the Planning Commission. So these are not items you're approving tonight by any means. It's just saying, yes, consider that on your work agenda and begin processing a proposal which goes through the full public process and would return to you for consideration in its final form. So the second item on here, the number three, the second new item, which is number three, is a similar kind of evaluation of the manufacturing zoning districts and the commercial zoning districts to kind of take a look at some of that zoning and make sure those zoning map areas correlate with the underlying uses that have developed over time, and that may again also include some comprehensive plan changes, because the comprehensive plan designations are kind of broad brush things like manufacturing or commercial, but within those designations there are zoning districts that are more specific and more fine-tuned. An example of a change that might occur with this one is that the shopping center, the Cost Cutter Shopping Center, is zoned MA, which is a manufacturing district that allows retail uses within it. Well, it's been developed pretty much exclusively as a retail use, so it might make more sense in our zoning code to actually just zone that for retail, which would require an underlying comprehensive plan map amendment. So that's something we're actually considering, looking at all of the manufacturing commercial zoning districts just to clean up those kinds of things related to that. And then finally, the last one is to amend the city's comprehensive plan to include changes to the capital facilities plan that would incorporate the new water master plan that Public Works has had developed. So essentially it would just be recognizing the existence of our new water system comprehensive plan and to bring that information into the capital facilities plan. Mm-hmm. Any questions on any of those items or the docketing process?
Yeah, if you could just, for me, review that as comprehensive amendments go through the process, any final decision would be in December, is that right?
Well,
end of the year.
So it depends kind of exactly how all that pans out, but typically we'll get started on them in the beginning of the year. Some of these may get waylaid by other activities, but they come back to you together as a group, whichever ones are ready, whichever ones are complete, late in the year, November, December. Sometimes it'll roll over to the beginning of the next year, but you wouldn't see any of these again until late in the year. The Planning Commission and staff, in the meantime, will be working on those amendments.
Yeah, I had another quick one. Once this docket is approved, as far as I understand, there will not be another opportunity for staff, council or the citizenry to add things to the docket?
We do have a second opportunity to add stuff to the docket, but it doesn't happen until after June 30th.
Got it.
So you could do a mid-year item if for some reason you came up with it and it gets batched with these. We can only update the comprehensive plan once a year, except in the case of an emergency. So even if you add something later, it still kind of gets put into the normal flow.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, if there's no further discussion, would someone make a motion, please, to approve Resolution 1727-18, initiating the 2018 docket of amendments to the City of Blaine Comprehensive Plan.
So moved.
Second.
Second. Okay, any further questions? Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion carried. Okay, next on the action items is the Sea Smoke final plat review. Mr. Jones.
Yes, so this is the second step in a two-step process to divide land into more than five pieces. So as a short plat is something that happens administratively, that's for four parcels or fewer. When it's five parcels or larger, up to an unlimited number, it's called a preliminary plat, and then it's a final plat, is the second stage of that long platting or that long subdivision process. Long as in many, not long as in time-consuming, although sometimes the applicants think that's what it is. And staff, too, sometimes. But so the process here is something that the Sea Smoke PUD, Planned Unit Development, and the Sea Smoke Preliminary Plat have already been approved. They were approved by ordinance back in 2016. Then there was a guidebook related to that developed, which is kind of like it's somewhat like the zoning code for that particular planned unit development. At the same time, the developer is developing engineering plans, then they go out and build the project according to those approved plans, and then they work to develop CC&Rs if those are required, as they are with this project, and a wide number of other things that they need to do. So they've been busy building Sea Smoke Phase 1, which includes 40 residential lots. Some of those are paired homes, and there's a group of four that are in the townhouse configuration, but they're all single-family, fee-simple properties, and then a series of tracts. The tracts can be used for, two of them actually are for commercial uses. The others are for multifamily, and the largest one is eligible for additional subdivision into multifamily or single-family parcels. And in fact, actually, some of the ones that are approved for multifamily could be approved and subdivided as well into single-family, is how the project was approved. The overall project is 119 dwelling units, potentially, but this phase is just for the first 40. Track D, which I have a more in-depth report about later on, is one of the tracks within the project, and that track is currently being held aside as a potential park or open space tract, but it is eligible for development as a residential property at 6.25 dwelling units per acre, which is the density in that area. If it's not developed, if the city doesn't choose to acquire it, or if private individuals don't acquire it and set it aside as an open space. And I'll get into more depth on that later. One of the key things to keep in mind on that is Track D actually doesn't exist yet. It doesn't exist until this plat is approved and recorded, and then there are multiple pieces of property. Right now, there's just one. So that being said, I just wanted to kind of run through the recommended conditions of this final plat approval, which are really relatively minor and kind of administrative, and then go back and talk about a few of the things that we're asking you to accept as changed conditions from the preliminary plat. So as far as what still needs to be done out there, the physical improvements are, for the most part, essentially all there. There's an interpretive sign that didn't get installed yet, but I spoke with the developer, and it'll be up in the next few days, most likely. There are some street signs that, as far as I know, as of Thursday, weren't up, but they'll be up. We essentially won't allow recordation of the plat. staff won't sign it and allow it to be recorded until those things are in place. And then the other recommended conditions of approval, and that's actually it for physical improvements. Essentially, everything else is built, which is unusual at this stage. They've actually done a really good job of completing and wrapping up all of the punch list items except those pretty minor outstanding items. They do, at the time of the drafting of this report last week, they did still need to provide us with a maintenance bond in the amount of $66,000, and I think that might have happened already. Do you know, Raven? It's like we're literally steps away from most of these things. There are a couple of changes on the final plat that we required, like corrections and adjustments on the drawing. We received that drawing today. Haven't reviewed it yet, but we received it today. The CC&Rs we received at the end of last week in their amended form with our corrections and adjustments in them, and then I got a little change in a draft this afternoon. So it's all kind of rolling in right now. Most of this is in the process of being completed. But we'll also need to provide record drawings of the civil engineering on Mylars, and they also need to provide us digital versions of the drawings. And then the only kind of outstanding physical item that becomes a condition of approval is that there's a new condition here that would apply to the final plat, which is that prior to occupancy of lots 13, 14, 15, 18, 19, and/or 20, a landscape buffer would be installed in the adjacent tract, according to the guidebook. In that area, the landscaping is going to be like a hedge. It's going to be a solid landscape screen. It's not native vegetation. It's kind of landscaping that would typically require more maintenance and probably would require watering after it's installed, and it won't naturalize as quickly. And that's why we're asking you to allow it to be delayed until they actually build those homes, and then they would landscape the backyards and put in the buffer at the same time. So those would come in at the same time. That hedge is around the back of the fire station. So it's on the two sides of the fire station where it will be a more dense screen to screen the homes from the parking lot of the fire station and vice versa. Whereas along the other perimeters of the project site, the landscaping is more of a native vegetation mix. There are some ornamentals mixed in along the street especially, but it's more naturalized, and that has been installed along the development area of Phase 1, which is essentially the frontage on Semiahmoo Drive. So that kind of leads me back to the conditions that that we're asking you to waive, if you will, or allow change to. And those are on page 2 of 3 in the staff report. The first one is related to a community garden. In the original PUD proposal, that was proposed as possibly one of the amenities for the project. The project actually eventually came through with different amenities, with a trail system and the interpretive sign that is going to be getting installed shortly. And so the project meets the requirements for the number of amenities and the types of amenities, but they just opted not to do the community garden. And since the community garden was a little bit of an unknown at the time, that condition said, well, tell us more about what it is. Give us more information if you're going to actually install it. So we're asking that you waive that because they have satisfied all of their open space amenity requirements other ways. Any questions on that? I guess I'll stop with each one of these and ask. The next one is a buffer enhancement planting, and that there's a couple different things there. One is the one that I just mentioned. We would request that you allow the buffering behind the fire station and between the fire station and the single-family homes that are going in there to be put in at the time that the homes go in. So that's one change. The other change to that one is on the south side of the project, according to our PUD standards, because it's the edge of the project, it's required to have an open space buffer, 20 foot wide, which is required in other areas as well. It's basically a screening between the PUD and other areas. Well, the other areas in this instance are unincorporated forest area that's not even in the city of Blaine. And that's not really so much the issue that it's not in the city of Blaine, but it is really just forest out there. And to install a native landscape buffer in that area would literally mean going into the existing native forest and digging holes in amongst the other plants and trees to plant plants and trees. It doesn't seem to make any sense at all, and there's, at this point, nothing there to buffer except the forest itself. That area is going to thicken up quite a bit over time, just because now there's more sunshine there, and we support the applicant's request to not dig up the native forest to plant native forest. Any questions on those two items? So the next one is, there was originally, in the resort Semiyama master plan, there's a street standard that requires a 3-foot gravel shoulder, gravel trail on the side of the rim. They don't get used a lot. I think people tend to walk in the streets in a lot of instances because there's pretty low traffic volumes, but it's still there in our plan. So the applicant, of course, included that in their proposal. And at that time, we said, you know, it really should be 4 feet wide, because that meets other standards for access better than a 3-foot trail is really insufficient for things like a wheelchair to pass in any kind of circumstance. Ultimately, through the public works review process and the land disturbance permit process, that got upgraded to a sidewalk. So it's a 4-foot wide sidewalk. So much more than the 3-foot trail, much more than the 3-foot gravel or the 4-foot gravel trail. So that condition we're actually asking you to waive it because we've got something much better as a result. That makes sense. And then the last one is creating a tract for the future private road to connect to the interior road, which we can look at a picture if you want. You have one in your packet, or I can pull one up on the screen. That would allow the interior road to connect to Semiyama Drive without any additional land division to occur. And the applicant has set up an easement and is asking that you accept the easement as that standard. Instead, at this time, until there is future land division to develop Tract F, they've created provisions so that any of the adjacent properties that might need to get that access would have the ability through the conditions in the plat and the CC&Rs to develop the road in that easement. So it serves the same need, but it's not technically what that condition said, which would be to create the tract. And I can show you that if you look at the second picture in the plat drawing. This, unfortunately, I'm sorry, there's not numbers on that one, but yes, it's that one, Mrs. Mayor, Madam Mayor. You can see that road network there, which is Sea Smoke Drive and Sea Mist Lane, and then at the end of Sea Smoke Drive, the road goes, it doesn't continue. There's an easement there. Would you like me to pull up the drawing and show it on the screen? Said.
That's because I'm not good at speaking to my microphone.
So the area that we're talking about is here, this part of the drawing, but you're on the next page, which is the better place to see it. It's over here on this side. The cursor is not the greatest cursor in the world, but over here on this side. So this is the easement right there. And it does go around the corner. You have to go to the next page of the plat to see, actually the last page of the plat to see that, where it comes around the corner here and goes out. So that easement satisfies the need for that piece, but it's technically not what the approval said. So so I need to let you know that and make sure that you understand that that is a change that you would be approving. It goes all the way through, and what it does is it allows this tract here, which is tract C, and it allows this tract here, which is tract B, if they were to be purchased by someone and built as homes, then they would be able to use this easement and build the extension of the private drive to get out. Otherwise, they would theoretically be landlocked. It would be a very bizarre circumstance where that would be how it ends up, but we have to make sure that those circumstances don't occur. So that's the last item that they're requesting to be changed. Staff supports all of those changes because they all seem to make sense. Some of them were things we requested, and all of them we feel satisfy the need and the requirement. It's really, this is mostly just an opportunity to make sure you're aware of what we're asking you to approve, and that's actually the whole purpose of the final plat. The whole purpose of the final plat process is for you to look at this and say, did they do what they were required to do? And they did, with the exception of those couple of items. So if you have any questions about that, I'd be happy to answer them. I know that the owner's representative, Wayne Swan, is here tonight. He could perhaps add some clarity on items if I don't know the answers.
I'd like to know where the community's interest in retaining Tract D as a park or open space fits into the review process. I know that this creates Tract D, but at what point in time do we as a council get to address their wishes and concerns regarding preserving that as open space?
So, great question. The preliminary plat and final plat process, this is the stage where you check to see did they do what they were told to do. In the preliminary plat approval, that's when the conditions are established, the requirements are established. So there was a series of public meetings, public hearings at the Planning Commission where people had an opportunity to speak. Took lots of letters, lots of information, lots of feedback. We originally saw an application from the applicant that included an open space, or not an open space, a park on that site with improvements like a play area and things like that. There was a lot of community input that said they didn't want that kind of park. They didn't want a developed site there. The Resort Center on the Master Plan, which is part of our comp plan, talks about a developed recreation facility, essentially like a city park, in that general vicinity. So that was something that we were encouraging the applicant to find a way to potentially include. We'd figure out if that made sense and those kinds of things. So it was part of the review process. There was a lot of public comment that said people didn't want to see that. They wanted to see it preserved as just natural open space. Our plan doesn't call for the preservation of natural open space. There's actually a lot of preserved natural open space and other open space like the golf course in Semiahmoo already. So that was something that was discussed as well and was brought forward to the council at the time. So ultimately, what ended up happening was we proposed a condition of approval, which is included in the memo related to Track D, that says it can be developed as a park. It can be developed as a private park, potentially, like the SRA could do that if they so chose to do that, or a private open space. The city's plans don't really support it being a public open space, just preserved land. So we didn't include that in the condition of approval, and council didn't require that as one of the conditions. The other thing, so essentially it was considered and those options were laid out in the preliminary plat stage, and those are still on the books. Those are still options for that property, but it could also be developed if the city doesn't exercise the option on that, or if others don't exercise the option on that. So right now is not the time to make that decision, because it's a decision, did the applicant do what they were supposed to do or didn't they do what they were supposed to do? And we're here telling you that they did. They did build the things that they were supposed to do. You do have an opportunity to make a decision on whether the city might want to try and purchase Track D, and I can give you more information on that during my other report. I can also do it right now, but it's kind of a separate item.
I just want a little bit of clarification on along Track D, along Semiahmoo Drive and Semiahmoo Parkway, there's a 20-foot buffer required, correct?
Yeah, you can see it. It's called Tract H. It's like a long, skinny strip around the outside there, and that would be a landscaped buffer whenever any of those parcels develop.
Is there currently a natural buffer there?
Yeah, there's, I mean, there's the normal understory, except it's been, you know, disrupted a little bit because in some places vehicles drove in. And,
so currently you can kind of see through it, and if there were homes on Tract D,
you'd see them.
You'd see them.
Yeah. Absolutely. But before homes were built on Track D, it would be, the buffer would be installed.
Okay. So if we require the buffer, at least when it's matured, theoretically you would not see homes there? Is that correct?
I would say that's probably not the case, because when you drive down Semiahmoo Parkway, you see homes all along, and some more than others, some less than others. But, I mean, you drive down Drayton Harbor Road, you drive down Semiahmoo Parkway, you see homes. There's a lot of forest there as well, but you see homes. So it wouldn't make the homes invisible. It's not going to make it so you can't tell that they're there, whether you plant it today or whether you plant it in the future.
You require that it be so, that vegetative buffer, a thick vegetative buffer, be required rather than something.
Yeah, Madam Mayor, you might want to speak into your microphone a little bit more.
Require a thick vegetative buffer that would screen, literally screen, the area?
You could during the preliminary platting process when you adopted an ordinance that had the requirements for this project. To do so now would be changing the playing field, and you'd be asking them to address something that you didn't in the original approval. And okay.
That's
the wrong
that could
timing.
Be possibly negotiated with the developer?
Potentially.
I understand we have that there's a window of a condition to hold this tract in reserve as open space or potentially for a park for the city to to require it or to purchase it, which closes, that window closes in April, but we have an opportunity to extend it.
We could negotiate an extension of that with the applicant, yeah.
So that would give us some time if we wanted to look into this further and consider either purchasing or I guess that would be the only option to be sure it was held as open space. We'd have to purchase it unless the developer would agree to donate it to the community. But anyway, I just noticed there was a window that was closing soon that
right.
We could extend if we so chose.
Mm-hmm. And that condition is there, that it can be, you know, extended through mutual agreement. That's there whether you approve the plat right now or
right.
You don't. It's still that
yeah.
Condition when the allowance to extend that window by mutual agreement is there.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you also have until April 10th, I don't have that memo in front of me,
yeah.
but until April 10th, I believe, to take that action.
Right.
And I can report to you on some of the finances related to that tonight, and we can give you a more complete report later. At a future meeting, if that's something you really want to look at in greater depth.
Okay. So it's kind of two kind of related but different issues, and tonight we're asked to approve the final plat.
Right.
And basically, by approving the final plat, we aren't really sealing the fate of Tract D in any way.
No, you're not. In fact, all you're doing is creating Tract D. You couldn't, if you had the money in your hands right now, you couldn't purchase Tract D because it doesn't exist.
Okay.
You have to do the final plat before it exists and the land transit action can happen. The primary thing that approving Tract D does is it makes it possible for the developer to begin to sell lots to interested buyers and to build homes on those single family lots. They have one home under construction now because they have one parcel, so they're legally allowed to build one lot. So they're building one that is essentially a model. And I know that they are anxious to submit building permits for numerous additional ones as soon as all these little administrative checks are finished. So they're anxious to do that piece. Track D would still exist or will come into existence once they record the plat, and you still have an option to decide what you want to do about that.
So Track I is the first track to be built on?
No, all those lots. The little lots that you see there?
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the ones with numbers on them.
Correct.
And they're building on, I think it's 35.
Is that what they're calling Tract I right now? Or is that G? Maybe G. I guess it doesn't matter.
They're not building on a tract now. They're building on the numbered lots. They're only building on lot 35, I believe, is where this, it's either 35 or 36.
Mm-hmm. But this will be built out before any other tracts are started, or is that an option for them?
It doesn't have to be. I think that would likely be, it would be almost built out or completely built out before they started on other phases, but not necessarily. Yeah. They would probably want to make sure that they, if they had homes that were selling and being built, they probably would want to make sure they continued to have a mark or a supply of those, so they might do something to subdivide Tract F and create more single-family homes, or they might say, wow, there's a great market for the townhouses, let's develop Tract B and put in more townhouses. Sure. So it's, that all depends on the market. The reality is, at this point, they just want to create the lots so that they can begin to build the single-family homes.
All right.
Well, I have one last question, then I'll leave everybody alone. Representatives from the Resort Association mentioned that the CCNRs were still being developed. I see that as number 3 in your recommended conditions of approval.
Yes.
So is that's still something that has to be finalized?
Yes. The CCNRs are required to be approved by the city and meet the city's requirements for things that satisfy the conditions of approval and the design and elements of our code. I just want to be really clear, it's not absolutely mandatory that the project CCNRs be approved by SRA. Theoretically, the project could develop its own CCNRs that meet all the requirements and have those approved by the city and move forward. The applicant and SRA have been through a long negotiation process, and they're going to be part of SRA, and so because of that, SRA needs to approve the final version. So that's, they need to do that piece to finish. I can't really envision the situation where they go the other direction at this point, but theoretically they could.
Okay, thank you.
So we're making sure they check all of our boxes. SRA is looking at other boxes, I guess, is a way to look at that.
Okay, I think we've got a pretty clear understanding of the approval and the conditions. So I would like to have someone make a motion to approve the Sea Smoke plat subject to the conditions of approval contained in the staff report.
So move.
Second. Second. Moved and seconded. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Go ahead.
I understand that there's been a lot of public comment on this. I just would remind folks that some of that doesn't come directly to us, so I haven't been privy to a lot of that, and I'd like to hear more.
Okay, we had a motion, and we had 5 ayes. Opposed? Okay, motion carried. Next on the agenda is a real estate listing agreement. Mr. City Manager.
Good evening, Council. Excuse me. Last June we came, we came to the Council with a request to approve a listing agreement with Mike Kent to list the airport property, Gateway, for the remaining undeveloped portions. Unsold portions, and at that time we'd asked the council to defer the decision until we had a chance to work through a potential sale with IDS, which I think we have talked about. They're the ones that had a grocery store interest in the property. We're still hopeful that project could come forward, but we still need to list the project, so we're coming back to the council tonight just to reaffirm we'd like to go forward with that listing agreement. We're asking the council tonight to allow myself to sign it after it's reviewed and approved by the city attorney. The terms are a 2-year term with a 5% commission on land sold. They are our agent, that agency relationship. It's a very typical real estate document, just like you'd see for any commercial property. So we're asking the council to authorize us to go forward, meet with the city attorney, finalize the document, and list the property with Mike Kent. Just for background, we did a request for proposal a couple of years ago for a real estate listing. We had four different brokerage companies apply or submit proposals. The company that we selected was from kind of a combination group. We were not particularly satisfied with some of that, so we decided to move away from that. That ended that relationship at the beginning of June of 2017, and that's when we brought the new listing forward. So this is just a carry forward of that same process.
Any questions on this?
A couple of questions. What makes you feel like Mike Kent was the right choice versus who we had before?
Well, I think the our experience has shown us that it's the local realtor that seems to be working the hardest. So this Tuckahoe Bay Food Project, which was recently completed, that's the contract's been sold in the process, that was brought to us unsolicited by Ron Freeman. So that has shown us that our local realtors are working pretty hard. The original plan was to try to utilize the benefit of, you know, a Canadian market looking to come to the United States. And when the IDS group came through, we talked to them, you know, quite a bit about their experience. They came through as a result of one of their clients driving by the property. So this idea that we'd had that we could get some larger bang for the buck behind this out-of-country relationship with a Canadian firm just didn't play out. And, you know, Mike Kent's well recognized, he's well known, he's been around for many years. His partner, Jeff Johnson, who's really partnered more on the commercial arm, have developed many, many properties in the area, as well as sold, and have a good network of clients. So, you know, it's really a practice of trying to stay local.
Mm-hmm. Also, we've tried. I mean, we had other national groups at the beginning of this when the airport was first taken off. We've had multiple agents trying to do it.
Yeah. You need to speak into your microphone. People can't hear you.
We've had many different agents, and we had some national agents at the beginning of the airport conference and stuff like that. So this is an ongoing thing.
And I don't think the previous realtors, did they bring even one client to us?
Not to my knowledge.
I don't think so. So
they did work with us on, you know, working with sales, but not from a listing perspective.
Not someone they brought to us.
No.
So I think we need to try this realty firm, and they're very well known in the area, and they've got extensive experience, and they do have a lot of Canadian connections as well. So I think it's probably a good idea too.
They're associated with Windermere.
Yeah.
I do. I agree with you. I think Mike Kent's probably a pretty good choice. He's local. He's got some good partners. I'm a little concerned about a two year negotiation versus maybe a 1 year with the possibility to extend. Because I know part of your complaint, and I think part of Charlie's complaint, is that it took a long time to get not a lot done with the last airport property. And if Mike's not doing what we want him to do in a year, I would like to be able to exercise the option of discontinuing that.
Sure.
Or, you know, or if we really feel like he's doing well, but just, you know, it just wasn't able to happen, extend him another year. So,
in my experience with him is that he'll be satisfied with whatever the council desires. 1 year's perfectly fine.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I think 1 year is a good place to start. We can always extend it.
Yeah, I agree.
Great.
Okay. So let's have a motion to accept staff recommendation and approve the listing agreement with Mike Kent and Jeff Johnson for the sale of the Gateway property and authorize the city manager to sign the listing contract.
For a period of 1 year.
For a period of 1 year.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. All in favor? Say
aye.
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 Motion carried.
Thank you, Council. So the next items are personnel contracts, which we need to go into closed session to follow up this collective bargaining.
Okay. So, and we will do that towards the end of the meeting and come back to this. Okay. Now we're ready to move on to commission, committee, and board reports. Steve Lawrenson is not here for the Tourism Advisory Committee. He asked me if I could attend the chamber meeting, which I did. And it was a good meeting, well attended. There was a speaker from Northwest Technologies speaking on internet fraud and computer protection for business. And it was quite interesting and eye-opening. And on to Alicia, your Boys and Girls Club in Port of Bellingham.
For the Boys and Girls Club, I did have a tour of the Boys and Girls Club and a meeting with the director there. Their numbers are up. They're well used. They're crowded. She really felt like her first priority would be space if we had a wish list. Really use of the kitchen. They pride themselves in providing a full meal to the children when they arrive, and they don't have a kitchen, so they're currently transporting food from the Ferndale Boys and Girls Club here to serve the children of Blaine.
Mm-hmm. It's been on their list for quite a while.
In terms of the port, I actually am having a schedule conflict on this regularly, but I'm hoping to change my other meeting to be able to accommodate attending these meetings. But I have no report.
Maybe you could just make contact with one of the commissioners and get an update.
I can certainly do that. And in fact, I have been, and I've been following what's been going on there. And right now, there really just is a large focus on a lot of activity happening in the Port of Bellingham, and I did go ahead and send an email to Port Commissioner Shepherd asking for an update on any action that's happening in Blaine or any reconnection on what could happen here. I have not yet heard back from him, but I will follow up on that.
Okay, good. Okay, Charlie, Drayton Harbor Shellfish.
No report for Drayton Harbor Shellfish. Port of Bellingham, MAC. Meeting is tomorrow, and if there's anything anybody wants me to ask them or to talk about, I can do that.
The Marine Advisory Committee. Yep. Okay, good. May, do you have a library or senior center report?
I have books.
All right.
During the month of January, I missed the January 22nd meeting, but the week prior, I attended the Whatcom County Library System. The Whatcom County Library System Board met at the Blaine Library, and I attended that meeting and the Friends of the Library meeting. Following the Whatcom County Library System, I think the most important thing that came out of that is Commissioner Washke said to the Friends of the Library that your project is on our radar all the time, and hoping that that project also stays on the city's radar. And that, of course, is the expansion of the library. Our Blaine Library has a higher density of books than other libraries in the county, and it also has a smaller meeting room and a higher use, so they have some pretty serious space constraints. Moving on to the Friends of the Library, something in that regard also, that building this year, 2018, the library building is 30 years old, and so it needs to be renewed.
And even at that, you know, that was the old police department.
That's right. The current facility is 5,400 square feet. Ideally, to serve a community this size, they would want 12 to 15,000 square feet. They have been involved in some very, very successful fundraising. In the last year, they got an anonymous $10,000 donation that they put out a challenge to fundraisers, or to donors in the community. That's been met twice around this time, and they're almost ready to hit it for the third time. They've also had, last year in 2017, they had a very successful concert by Bob Milne, which raised almost $3,000. And we have another Bob Milne concert that's an important fundraiser for them. That's on March 16th. So mark your calendars. You can get tickets at brownpapertickets.com. They also, this is something I found interesting, their little used bookstore in the library makes $100 to $200 a week.
Yeah.
They really, we don't have a bookstore in Blaine, and that's an active little spot, so I'd encourage anyone who has books to donate, donate them to them. And also, if you want a book, go buy one. Then just in total, they have in their savings account, and that includes, you know, all their different pots, but they have almost $60,000. And for a volunteer organization, that went from about $12,000 to almost $60,000 in a year. So they're really in high gear. I think they should be commended for that. When it comes to what the Friends of the Library spells as the Whatcom County Library System envisions for the future, they would like the city to keep the idea of bringing everything together in our Civic Center very much on the radar. That speaks to the Boys and Girls Club needing more space. The Senior Center, that's my next report, has talked about needing more space as well. Everybody comes up, could use more space, and we do have property downtown, including the old City Hall. So I think that's something that for 2018 we need to make a focus, is to filling the needs of these groups that really do serve our community. The Senior Center is always busy. The library, their small meeting room has scouts, has citizenship, has what happens when your fixed engine light on your car goes on, how to can and how to prune your trees. So there are a lot of services there, and I think we need to put some effort into meeting those needs. On to the Senior Center. I just did talk about them a little bit, but I didn't bring it. They have a pancake breakfast on Saturday. Everybody go.
Yeah, that's monthly, right?
It is monthly. It wiggles around a little bit.
I think that's a fundraiser for them as well.
That is a fundraiser.
And they raise a lot of their own funds.
They do. They raise a lot of their own funds.
They work hard. Yeah.
And in addition, just as far as what do these groups provide to our citizens, if you want to look at the calendar for the Senior Center, they have, let's see, I missed Tai Chi this morning. They have Zumba all the time. That's not to mention lunches and music. It's that facility gets a lot of heavy, heavy use.
Very active.
So,
and very energetic.
Absolutely.
Not what your old Senior Center used to be. They think a lot outside the box and attract a lot of people.
One of the things, speaking of outside the box, is that they're patronizing local businesses. They have a supper club once, sometimes twice a month, where they'll go to a local restaurant all together, make a reservation. The next one is at the Ocean Bay Chinese restaurant. So not only are they keeping our seniors out and active, but they're encouraging patronage of local businesses, which I think is a great outside-the-box idea.
Community-minded, yeah. Sure. Great. All right. Next up is the WTA board.
Nothing to report. We have a meeting on Thursday.
Okay. Great. And Public Works Advisory Committee, is there anything there?
So the Public Works Advisory Committee met with had the Chief of Police come and speak for about half of the meeting, and it was great. He gave a good presentation, talked about emergency management in case of emergency, in case the emergency operations center needs to be put up, how public works and the rest of the city is going to need to be involved in all that. And you know, it was pretty eye-opening. You know, there's a lot of moving parts to that, to include fire, public works, police, everybody involved. But one thing that I came away from it was the biggest moving part was the folks out here and the citizens, you know, because in case of a disaster, you're going to be on your own likely for 24 to 72 hours. And so community involvement is something that the chief really pushed the button on, that's something that we, the city, need to really look at through the city council, through the Chamber of Commerce, through Facebook and Nextdoor and whatever the case may be. So that's, I think, something that community groups as an organization probably we all need to kind of look to in the future. And and in this technological age, it might be easier than you think. So, I mean, we've on just on Nextdoor alone, we've been able to find 3 dogs in our neighborhood in the last month. So it's been kind of nice.
That's a great app. It really is. I think there's a local preppers group, too, that they're not one of these extreme prepping group that you hear about sometimes either. They're very practical, and they put on 2 or 3 classes, like on a Saturday afternoon at the Senior Center and elsewhere in our area, on various topics to prepare ourselves for in the event of an emergency. It sounds like a really great group.
Absolutely.
Okay, next up, Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee. I've asked the city manager to give a report on, we did have a meeting this past week.
Thank you, Mayor. So just a couple of things. We had Don Goldberg, who's the new Executive Director of Economic Development for the Port of Bellingham. He's been here twice now. And to kind of follow up with Mr. Hopkins' request for medical care in the town, in the city. He's been working hard to help us with that project. He's a strong advocate that physicians in your city are really an important part of attracting and retaining both citizens and business. So he's already met with the president of Peace Health. He's been talking to the Francisco group. He's met with Park Hodges and some others about recruiting doctors to the area. I personally met with the doctors, I want to say Dr. Allen, his wife. And they've asked the city for some support. Met with, talked with Josh Sitkin about the city's legal capacity to get involved in that activity. He seems to believe that the city could be involved in some capacity. So we're going to be talking more specifically about that with you at the next meeting. We'll have more plans. I think that basically the doctors are asking for, as you mentioned, some support on recruiting replacements for themselves. Because I think between Don Goldberg, his efforts to bring medical here, and our own efforts, we hopefully will make some progress. Dr. Allen said that they are planning to retire at the end of 2018. Mm-hmm. They're going to close up shop. So it's becoming a real critical for us to work on that project. So I thought it was really good to have Don's support. And he's got a lot of energy and seems to get out and make things happen. We also talked about this ongoing conversation we've had about the webpage and community conversations and communications. I think the Economic Development Committee is very interested in that. We recognize there's a value to that for economic development as well as community welfare. We're recommending that we use some of the economic development funds of the council to help support that. So that was one of the priorities that came out of the council retreat as well. So we'll be following up with that this month. Then the last area is a conversation about the Visitors Information Center. As you have seen it, it's in construction now. At the next meeting, we're going to hopefully have a chance to tour the building. And you're welcome. We'll make it a public meeting. It's all, the interior is nearly finished, but it's going to be a wonderful space. And my feeling is that it will be one of the first new facilities that the city has, and it should be buffed out. And so we're recommending furnishings and furniture and TV monitors and some other things to really represent the city at its best, as well as the community and the business community. So we'll be bringing back a recommendation for those expenditures. From. We have a nice small conference room that can be used for community groups, chamber. There's going to be a need for some technology in the space. We can't really go for that. Those kinds of pieces of equipment. So we'll have an inventory of items to purchase and report those as well. Our next meeting is the first Tuesday of next month.
All right. Any questions? Okay, the next on the list is the Small Cities Caucus. We have a meeting next Tuesday.
Yes, ma'am.
And, yeah, let's remember that. Our finance director isn't here. The red loan, I have no report to make on that. We have not had any applications for the city loan program. Whatcom Council of Governments, no report. We have a meeting next month. We only have meetings every other month. And Whatcom County Council, I also have no report there. And Finance Committee, Mr. Lazenby is not here this evening. And so we will move on to department reports. And first up is Public Works.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. A bit of a report today of a lot of things going on in Public Works, so I'll just move as quickly as possible, but feel free to ask any questions. First, thank you, Councilmember Davidson, for the update on the Public Works Advisory Committee. The committee actually decided that emergency management is a focus that they want to work on, and some next meeting, the 1st of March, we have John Gargett coming, who is the Director of Emergency Management for Whatcom County, so we're really excited about having him. A couple of updates on Vista Terrace. First, all of the homes in Vista Terrace are connected to Green City Light. One exception is the one member who wants to go underground and just wants to wait for the good weather so that we're not digging up his yard in the muck. There's been some correspondence going back and forth regarding utility wire hanging at 531 Howland Street that has been addressed by Comcast. So I'm glad that that worked out. We met with Mayor Onion and Deputy Mayor Lawrenson on various topics a couple of weeks ago, and I just wanted to give you an update regarding the Gateway Storm Pond. As you know, with the interest in the Gateway properties and getting an agent on board, that project is there, and we continue to offer the pond as an advantage or an alternative for development. We are holding it aside. We don't have budget for the pond at this point in time, but we have like a design report, and we are ready, and we have a package that we could pull together to make that into a project. So just wanted to let you know, because it's one of those things that's like, okay, do we have it or don't, and what's the status? Well, we did have at one point in time a Public Works trust fund money, but we never had enough people interested to want to cash it in, because we would have to pay it back. So that project is still alive, but only will happen when there's enough interest to make it happen. As you might see, if you've been to the Senior Center, Carla Curcio did come and start the improvements to the driveway, and we also did lay the conduit for the new sign that is going to be going in, the new LED sign. I expect that they will be back when they can pour concrete. So they have some good weather here in the next couple of days. It's just a matter of scheduling. And then we also have asphalt plants down right now. So it is a scheduling thing, but I'm guessing by the fact that they left their excavator on site that they're pretty anxious to get back. So that's a good thing. One thing to keep in mind is not only are we doing the driveway in the front, I'm having them put a concrete sidewalk where there was kind of a dirt path that came from the apartments. People are using it enough that it's actually forming a path, I've always decided to not fight that. And so we're formalizing that. For the driveway on 8th, I am not going to take that driveway out. We're just going to put some bollards in there for now, just to make sure that everyone is happy with how the new driveway is functioning, and then at a later date we could pull that driveway, or we can just keep it as an emergency access driveway. And then the contract that we have with Cole Kircher also includes resurfacing the parking lot on the G Street side. So that's another reason we're waiting for the paving outfits to get back into season, and they're going to grind all that up, smooth it all out, and lay a foundation. And it also includes putting in a drain where that yard has been having trouble draining. And we'll also be putting in some bollards there to keep people from driving on the lawn, which has been a problem, which is probably why it's having trouble draining. We're also working with the library, so good to hear your conversation about the library. They have an interest in some lighting improvements, and so we've been formulating some rebate equations to give them some incentives for doing the lighting, and we're looking at some kind of cost share where we can justify the cost based on reduced maintenance, and they can justify the cost because it helps the patrons, and the rebates kind of make it all work. So looking forward to seeing how that pencils out. Some changes in janitorial, just based on the feedback that we were getting about the pavilion, we've decided to increase the hours for our part-time janitor from 20 to 30 hours a week. She's also been taking on some other work here and there in this building, and she'll also be taking on some hours with the new Visitor Information Center, so it just seemed like the right time to do that. She really stepped up when our other janitor was out due to his wife's illness. Probably got my email about Mr. Esposito's wife, but fortunately she passed away. But he is back at work this week, so if you do see him around, give him a pat on the back. It's been a hard year for him. Make sure I'm not not missing anything here. We've also had some communication about some concerns about fencing in the right-of-way at 287 Bogwood Street. I wanted to give you a report on that. So right now the code in Title 12 actually says that fences shall not be higher than 30 inches without a permit. When we look at the Title 12, it does allow for fencing in the right-of-way with a permit. And so we looked at the fence in question. We don't have any concerns about site distances, which is what that 30-inch requirement is all about, because the fence has gaps in it. And so we actually did an obstruction permit with the property owner. It lets us still utilize that right-of-way if we ever need for any purpose, but it gives them the legal right to have the fence there for now. And it's a very attractive fence, so I think it was a win-win for everybody.
When was that resolved? Just this past week? Or?
Yes, the actual permit was signed this morning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Let's see. The IMTC core team meeting is this Thursday. It's going to be meeting in Blaine, and they're talking about rail topics, so I am planning on attending that. Well, 5.1 is down. This is our heavy-duty monster well that we just put in last year, and the VFD died over the weekend. It is covered under warranty, but unfortunately it is creating a little ripple in our goal to perfect the well, which means you're supposed to use it for a certain amount of time. Yes, sir.
You gave some three letters. Tell us what it was that you said quit.
IMTC?
Yeah.
International Mobility Trade.
The well.
But for the well he's talking about.
VFD, Variable Frequency Drive, sorry.
What is that?
It's the thing that keeps it humming. It also it allows us to pick up speed and operate the motor electronically. Okay. And it's also like a giant surge protector. So without it, the well is not functioning. So, yeah, that's a real bummer. But we're hoping that we'll get that. It's already being shipped today, and we're really fast-tracking that. Then my prop that I picked up is to let you know that the draft of the North County Water Supply Feasibility Report is now available. This was undertaken by Birch Bay Water and Sewer with a Department of Ecology grant for the new council members. This is the concept of looking at Blaine's water supply and the groundwater within our watershed as potential for assisting the North County with some of the water issues that they have, and also an opportunity for us to build some of the infrastructure that we need going into the future by others paying for it. So it's I haven't gotten all the way through it yet, but if it's something that just fascinates you, I do have a copy on CD, and I'm happy to share it, but I wanted to make sure you knew that it was out, because it might very well get into the paper. So I'm looking to see Stephanie behind me. And then finally, I believe the city of Oak Harbor has contacted us. They're building a wastewater plant very similar to ours, and have asked to come and talk to us about our plant and is requesting a tour. So I thought this would be a great opportunity. If you're interested in going on a tour, we're looking at next Wednesday. We don't have a time set yet, but I'm just asking if you're interested to let me know, and if Wednesday works, to kind of block out your day a little bit, and then once we have a time and we're waiting to hear back from them, we'll get back to you. It'll be sometime between 9 and 3.
I'm interested. I don't know if it'll work with my schedule, but keep me up to date depending
okay.
on the time.
Great. Any questions? Yes, sir.
The road that's going into the driveway that's going into the senior center, Is the sidewalk going to be ground down to make more of a gradual corner going in there? Is that, or is it going to be a sharp 90? It's kind of, somebody was asking me if it was, it seems like it, for old people who drive big honking pickups and stuff like that coming and going, that driveway is not real wide,
The driveway will have a typical tape ramp down.
But, I mean, I'm talking about the curved side with the sides and, you know, a lot of...
The radius.
Yeah.
I'll look at that. I believe it does meet our two-way standard, and we didn't want to go too far to the west because of the bus stop. So I think they were trying to keep it within that particular range, but it's about 30 feet wide, I believe. So.
If you have a sharp edge to a corner, it's kind of a, it's not, you know, if you're going to have a divider in the middle so people aren't cutting across. Mm-hmm.
So Charlie, are you talking about an apron?
Yeah, an apron.
Kind of a curved apron to be able to...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was curious. Somebody asked me about that. So.
Okay, I'll take a peek.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
I had a couple things. In mentioning the senior center and the lighting, I did get it. There were emails floating around at some point about a ramp for access to the stage. Is that something that they're working with you on?
So I was referring to the library with the lighting.
Okay.
I believe we responded to them about the stage. I can't remember. No, I think it was Tim, actually, that responded about the stage relating to that. But I think it would be very complex to make that stage ADA compliant. It would involve essentially creating a quasi-lift.
All right, yeah, that's the answer that I wanted. Yeah. And then back to the Boblet fence saga, that is something I've heard a lot of concerns from. It's my neighborhood, from my neighbors as well as members of the neighborhood association, and I'm going to be speaking to them next week. I'm glad that's something that could be resolved so that the students can keep their very attractive fence. But there are also a lot of other people in the neighborhood walking up and down our streets and saying, whoa, those are 80-foot right-of-ways, those little streets. And some people are saying, well, my 100-year-old hedge is in the right-of-way. Mm-hmm. And it's not 2 feet high. My horse chestnut tree is in the right-of-way, and it's 90 feet high. It's something that I would appreciate staff at least taking a look at that ordinance, perhaps how it applies in that neighborhood or in other areas specifically. I know at least in Salishan, those right-of-ways were established long, long, long ago when the views of the neighborhood and views of the city were very different. And I think it could possibly use a fresh set of eyes to make sure that it is serving the needs of the public regarding good visibility at those corners so that the city has access to right-of-way when they need it for roads and utilities, but also so that people have more common sense use of their property rather than a rigid rule that doesn't really make sense in the real world.
So thank you for that. I did look at the ordinance in pretty good detail in before coming to the conclusion that it would be better to offer a permit than to come to you with a request to change in the law. And my thinking on that was it's better for us to have a case by case if there's a concern than to have this blanket, you know, change, then that we might end up missing something. And really the way that it is written refers to things like walls, fences. Doesn't say anything about a tree, you know, because a tree you can kind of, you know, do one of these about, but having a fence or a wall or one of those types of obstructions is really what we're the most concerned about when it's over a utility or really into a side obstruction or something. So if anybody in the neighborhood is at all concerned or would like to talk to me further about that, I'm happy to go to any site and look at it and do a site study, you know, a vision study, you know, or anything like that.
Okay, that sounds good. I'll take that forward.
I guess one question is, where did the complaint come from about that fence? So was that, I mean, where did it come from?
It actually started with a code compliance complaint, which turned out to be minor, but then it had, as a part of researching that, it, the fence was discovered by that. So it started with planning, and then it got turned over to public works.
Everything starts with planning.
Okay, then I'll just let Michael talk.
when Raven said it started with planning meant that the complaint, the request for an investigation was provided to planning, and apparently there was somewhat of a dispute between neighbors. The neighbors who have the fence that we're talking about, I believe, made a complaint against the neighbors across the street and their fence, and in turn, the neighbors across the street made a complaint against the other neighbors. And so one fence was determined to be compliant, the other fence was determined to potentially not be compliant. We did further investigation and evaluate, and eventually realized that it was actually compliant with Title 17, the intent of the code, and there was the outstanding violation related to Title 12, which is the being taller than 30 inches, which is why the authority transferred over to Public Works. So we don't go out and investigate every single, or we don't go out looking for things like fences and hedges and whatnot because, well, there's just way too much work to do. You could not possibly staff the people to do that because there's, like you said, hedges grow, things happen. So just like most of the things that are not life safety issues that we see, it's complaint-driven. It's comments from folks that say, hey, is that okay or not?
Okay. All right. Public safety, the chief isn't here this evening, so we'll go on to administrative services.
Did you skip me?
I did skip you.
And we've talked a little bit about Track D already, obviously, and you have a memo in your packet that you've, I'm sure, had an opportunity to read. I'd be glad to go over that memo or maybe address specific questions you have related to Track D. It's the last page of the packet, I think, if you're looking for that. And then, we could talk about, as far as options on moving forward, what you might want us to come back with. That would be one of the more helpful things to find out if you want to explore opportunities. So, well, I guess I would ask Madam Mayor, what would you like me to do? Review this information or just address questions?
I think we addressed most of it in our previous discussion, unless anybody up here wants to make further comments or questions.
What would be helpful for me is to see options if we were to preserve that, what that would look like budget-wise, dollars-wise, and where from.
Mm-hmm.
Any practical options would be helpful.
Okay.
I'd like to see what the owner's thoughts are, the owner of the property's thoughts are, because we might be doing a lot of work for something that he's not willing to, he or she's not willing to negotiate with the city about. So.
Okay.
I would, not tonight, but in the future, if staff could just give some clarity. Requests from the SRA have mentioned that the city could reduce development and impact fees. Then there's also been mentioned that the city could use park impact fees. I'd like to, as Alicia pointed out, which one of these are actual options available to the city and which one of these should I stop looking at because that's not how it works. And then I'd also like to see, you mentioned it could become a private park. So there are also options that could be worked towards between the developer and the SRA, as far as I understand, with the city stepping out.
Mm-hmm. Are you asking me that? Certainly, yes. Two private parties could exchange the land, or a group of citizens could get together and raise enough money to purchase the land. So there are definitely solutions that could occur without the city's direct involvement.
I agree with Alicia. Get back some different options to look at and then just review this material. I think it's going to take a little thinking. I'd like to talk to somebody.
It will definitely take some thinking, and we'll definitely come back with some potential alternatives. I can summarize a little bit of it just so you have some things to think about and kind of digest since it's a topic right now. The way that we would purchase it with city funds would be by amending the budget, right? Because we've not budgeted for it this year, so you'd need to do a budget amendment, which would be a CIP, a capital improvement plan amendment to purchase capital. And so that would be something that you would work through. We could bring forward options and proposals for that. Currently, we have about $31,000 in the park impact fee reserve account. It's about 10% of the lower estimated amount, value of that property, so that's just the reality of the situation. We do anticipate to spend $34,000 this year through our CIP, so all of that money we expect to take in about $40,000 to $60,000, so it's a regenerating account, right? So there is some money there, but it is allocated, and there's a little bit more expected to come in. And then the park impact fees that would be collected from Phase 1 and Sea Smoke are a total of $40,000 at our current rate, because that's $1,000 per unit. Theoretically, there would be $119,000 in total if they built all the units and did the full allowed density on the site. So those are some of the sort of the numbers at play there. And we'll come back with sort of options on what you might look at and how you could do that. I guess that's really the kind of the key thing there is there the money? Is that how you want to expend it? And what other potential non-cost options might be available? So we'll work on that, and hopefully by the next meeting, but certainly before April, when there's that deadline to either negotiate an extension or act. Mm-hmm. That work? Yeah,
thank you.
That will work. Thank you.
Great. Okay. So the only other thing I have, which is not mentioned on the agenda, it's very brief, is that we've received contact from Whatcom County Health, and actually it's sort of a consortium of health departments in Western Washington, offering assistance in working with the city to develop a smoke-free, vape-free regulation for our parks. Rather than go through a bunch of work there and coordinate with the Park and Cemetery Board and potentially develop a law related to vape-free and smoke-free parks, I wanted to raise that issue here so that you were aware of that and just give you an opportunity to get a hold of me, you know, offline, and certainly you're more than welcome to here and now, but if you want to get a hold of me and let me know what you're thinking on that area, because I'd like to get a sense of whether at least some of you are thinking that's something worth spending some time on or not. It sounds like, on some levels, it sounds like a great idea, but it's also yet another project to work on.
I'm interested in learning more.
Okay. So that's all I have, unless you have any questions for me. Thank you.
My turn. So at our retreat back on the 20th of January, the council had asked for cliff notes for Robert's Rules of Procedure. I did provide the council with something right off of their website, and I was wondering if that satisfies that or if you want me to do some further research on that.
This is great.
Thank you. This is great. Perfect.
I'm glad to hear that. And then to follow up on that, we were still planning a study session in March for rules of procedure, so kind of homework for the council to review. I think it's resolution 1604-12, and see if you have any questions that I can answer or anything that you would like to review during the study session. Just let me know, and I'll make a list. So you can just send me an email or give me a call, and we'll get something done.
Where do we find that, Sherry?
You should have it in your council handbooks, and then it was also provided in the handbook for the retreat.
What was the number again?
I think it's 1604-12. Don't quote me.
Is it it has a separate section in the retreat book?
Yes.
So okay. For next month, let's take a chance to
do your homework.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right, thanks a lot. Mr. Wilbrecht.
Mayor and Council, as you can see from staff reports and agenda items, we're busy doing lots of things. And I'll just make one comment about the park's no smoking thing. We spend a lot of time making rules for exceptions. It's unfortunate we wind up having to spend time on things where just common sense you think would prevail. You're in a park with children and activities, and you're puffing away on something, and now there's a rule that prohibits that. Someone's going to make a phone call to the city, and we're going to have a smoking cop who or somebody go out and do a code thing. So it's just unfortunate that people just can't use common sense. Like no smoking on others would be a really good way to start that thing. Mm-hmm. So this is my little editorial on that.
Question, are we able to like just do something like signage, or we need to make a
Well, I can tell you that if staff decided to put a sign up that said no smoking without the council support, we'd have our butts kicked across the city.
We'll talk about that then.
We might get it anyway, but we'd just have your backing us up, which is a good thing.
Sometimes peer pressure, public pressure, a friendly sign, we would appreciate no smoking in our park kind of thing. Not like it's a rule, but just sort of like put in that way.
Well, neighborhoods themselves, I mean, this the application you were talking about, neighborhood application, things like that may help just encourage people to remind them you're in a public space and, you know, interacting with others in public spaces. But
even
anyway,
those rules, people will break them, so you have to have somebody to police it.
So I just have a couple of reports. Actually, really the most important report is since our last meeting, the mayor and I went to Olympia twice. The first time we met with all of our legislative representatives from the 42nd District and then a couple of others who were representing either the majority of the Democrats or the caucus for the Republicans on transportation. And I thought we did a good job. They were very receptive to all of our concerns and comments. And, of course, the projects we're looking to advance with are funding for Exit 274, and just for the audience background, the exit 274 is two parts. One is an off-ramp southbound, so if you're on I-5 southbound, you can get off at 274 instead of having to drive clear onto Birch Bay Linden Road. That's sort of an off-ramp. That would tee up to the top of the flyover, which is a northbound off-ramp. Then there'd be a grade crossing for over the railroad tracks. So you can imagine this very high structure that at the end you'd get off the freeway, either north or southbound, fly over the top of the railroad track, and then wind up down by the hardware store at the very high point, not too far from the railroad track on the Peace Portal side. There'd be ramps that would go north and south on Peace Portal. That's the project that I think was been identified in the practical solutions process. That's the process that the governor has initiated through the Department of Transportation, so we're feeling strong that we did a good job with that process. It took us a couple full 2 days with 8 or 10 staff members from WashDOT. So we're optimistic. We're asking for $500,000 this year to do the interchange justification report update, and then $12 million to fund half of the project. It's a $25 million project. So keeping our fingers crossed on that project. The other project is providing utilities up through East Blaine all the way to Grandis Pond. That's a $6 million project. We originally asked for about $3.2 million. The remainder of that would be provided by the developer. We've been getting notification that that number is not going to come in that large. We're hopeful for something around $500,000, potentially six. It could be two or three. It depends on how the legislature resolves, and of course Missouri would be, we'd be disappointed, but I think that project still seems to have legs. This is a very short session with the legislature. They've got a $30 million pool of funding to draw from. Our $3 million is 10% of that, which is a lot of ask going across the state for $30 million. So we're crossing our fingers for about $500,000. If that were the case, our goal would be to get up to East Maple Ridge, which would be a wonderful project for us if we could acquire that kind of funding to do that project. That's 350 home sites that would be ready to develop. That's a project, shovel-ready project to start with. It's all approved on paper. Public Works has approved all of the permits for it. It just has to get started. So we're putting every bit of pressure we can on that. I encourage people to call your legislators, because they're now making those decisions. And that's the end of my report. Any questions for me? Comments?
Thank you for your work on that.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Hope it works out for us.
And also I want to mention, talking about our legislators, they're going to be here on Saturday, this coming Saturday, at the Senior Center for their town hall. They decided to have it in Blaine this year. Representative Van Werven said, maybe this is Blaine's year. We're going to have this at Blaine this time. You're getting a lot of attention, and well, we're asking for money anyway, but they're going to be here at 2 o'clock.
If they came early, we could feed them pancakes.
So as many as you can make it, I'm sure they would appreciate a good crowd.
I actually went to that town hall meeting a couple of years ago when they had it at the school, and it was great. So tell your friends and neighbors, because there was a lot of good question and answer and a lot of good FaceTime afterwards. If you had specific questions for your legislators, I thought it was fantastic. And I was able to, this is before city council, I was able to connect with some people in town and had some of the same concerns of mine. So, yeah, I encourage everybody to go if you get a chance.
And on these two projects that the city manager has mentioned that we went down to Olympia for, this is really good timing because they haven't, it's not going to be till next week we might get an answer on it, on any of the money, but to bring those projects up with them and how important they are to our community would be a really good time to do that. Okay. Moving on, we have to take note of calendar items coming up. And I just wanted to mention something. I've been having a lot of communication with Jesse Kreit, who is the executive business manager, I guess you could say, of Touchstone Counseling. It's a counseling center that opened up here in Blaine just a few short years ago, and they have provided an excellent service, in particular as far as youth, counseling with youth. There's a big suicide thing going on with kids nowadays and bullying, and they deal with a lot of those issues and family issues. And they have started what they're calling a Healthy Youth Coalition. And it's pretty amazing in a short period of time. And his wife is the main counselor at this center, and they have probably three or four others, as well as an MD on staff now. And so they have this coalition going on, and I've been to a few of the meetings because they like the support of the city, not necessarily financial, but certainly supportive of their efforts. And we all are concerned with our youth and having a healthy youth community. And so they've kind of pulled in people. They've had the schools involved. The superintendent is going to be speaking at their next meeting. They've had someone from the YMCA speak. They've had Birch Bay Parks and Rec. They've had the Opportunity Council. And they've gotten the county health department to at least verbally at this point commit to staffing a position to keep this coalition going, because Jesse only has so much time. He was willing to get it kicked off, but they actually might get a staff person at considerable expense to work on this as well. So I wanted to mention that they are having a meeting this Thursday at noon at the Birch Bay Activity Center there.
On Gemini,
off of Anderson Road. And I think they're going to have free lunch provided. They've done that the last two meetings. I don't know who's
provided by the agent.
Yeah, but I think there's no charge for it. And, the last meeting I went to had probably 50 or 60 kids there. And they sat there for this meeting with these speakers. I was pretty amazed how attentive they were. And then afterwards they had a fun time. But there were like 100 people at this meeting at the Pizza Factory. We could hardly fit them all in. So the next one is going to be Thursday at noon. And one of their ultimate goals is to establish a permanent teen center, something for teens. The Boys and Girls Club is great up to sixth grade. It gives after-school programs and extracurricular activities for that age. But there's nothing for the teens. And we really need a spot for the teens to congregate and have something to do, a place to call their own. So that's one of the ultimate goals, is to have a teen center. And maybe the city can help in one way or another along that regards to help advance that project. So I wanted to let everybody know about that as well. That's all I had. Anybody have anything else unfinished or new business? Okay, we're going to not adjourn the meeting, but recess for an executive session, and we will be discussing some collective bargaining issues and personnel contracts, and then I imagine that will take maybe an hour. It's not going to be a real short one. And then we will come back in to adjourn the meeting, but no action will be. Oh, there will be action taken on personnel contracts, but that's all we'll be coming back for. So thank you all for coming, and we will now recess for executive session.